everybody. Welcome to Dennis and Julie. Dennis Prager, Julie Hartman. We talk to each other every week. And I have to believe, and I don't care if it sounds self-aggrandizing. People who know me know I'm not into that. But it doesn't matter. If it does, it does. There's nothing like what we have. There just isn't. And it's a very beautiful thing. It's like an ode to the human condition that we could be so open, so close, and such a division of years, mm-hmm. different sex, different everything, different backgrounds.
It's so much fun, too.
It totally is. I look forward to it.
Oh, I look forward to it so much. And it's crazy to think that when I'm driving to work, I am more excited to get to work and do the work than to leave.
That's a big deal. Talking about big deals, I was thinking as you recorded one of the commercials for the broadcast. So you said use the promo code Hartman.
Yes.
And I thought, at 22, to be a promo code.
I know. It's pretty cool.
I got to say, that's ahead of me. I was not a promo code at 22.
Well, you were quite something.
No, 22. I was. I agree with you. But promo code was not one of the things. I'm not sure they had promo codes then.
Yeah, they definitely did it.
You don't know that for
no
a fact.
Offense.
Maybe they did and maybe they didn't. But I wasn't in radio then. I was very public. You know, I started public life exactly as you at 21.
I know.
Our parallels are
crazy.
They're eerie. That's exactly correct.
So did you know, because I just did this PragerU video, as you know. I filmed a Stories of Us.
So tell people what Stories of Us
is.
It's a very big feature at PragerU.
Yes. So Stories of Us is a video series that PragerU does where they identify people who typically started out their lives on the left and then transitioned to the right. So they had Adam Carolla on. They have Amala Epinobi, who, of course, has a very dramatic story about, you know, being raised by a left-wing activist and then having a very sharp turn to the right. So they interviewed me. And what was my original point for bringing this up? What were we just talking about before? Shows you how relaxed I am.
Yes, that is true. Oh, man, that's a good
Sean,
question.
Are you listening?
I mentioned promo code and how
promo
successful
code.
At your age you are. And then you mentioned that you were at PragerU. So I don't know what you had
in
mind.
If I re-listened to it, I would be able to.
You would? Okay, well, you realize, folks, how spontaneous this thing is. Doesn't matter.
I'm so sorry.
It doesn't matter. I probably interrupted your stream of thought when I said, tell everybody what Lives of Us are about.
But Stories of Us.
Stories of Us. It's a very wonderful series.
It
is. The autobiography, and people are very open.
They are very open, and it's really just, I think it's such a good thing for PragerU to do, because as Dana, who's one of the people who runs it, was explaining to me, their listeners fall into two categories. People who are on the right and are open and proud about it, and people like me a few years ago who, you know, was toying around with conservative beliefs or was sort of silently, at least for a bit, conservative, and then was a little bit on the fence as to whether or not to go public about it. So it's a fantastic video series. I have no idea why I brought it up. Again, it shows how relaxed I am, but I will just say, no, seriously, I mean, I remember at the beginning of this podcast, I would get so nervous before it. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
I would get nervous because I so badly wanted to make you proud and wanted it to succeed. And then now, maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but it's so fun and relaxing. I don't get a hint of nervousness. But anyway, back to PragerU. It is a compound over there, Dennis. I mean, just the physical building is enormous, and it shows, you know, the scale of what you guys are accomplishing. But I love going there because, as I said to you a few minutes ago, when you walk in, you feel like everyone there is both doing good and are good. Mm-hmm. They are just, from the makeup artist to the camera mm-hmm. people to the photographer to the person interviewing me. I mean, everyone was just, the parking attendant, like literally from start to finish, you are just with deeply kind people. And I'll tell you that when we were done shooting the video at the end, you know, there are like 15 people in the room. It's a production, these videos. They put a lot of effort into it. And I was walking out and I just turned to all of them and I said, you know, for racist bigots, you guys are really nice people. And they thought that was funny.
The characterization of conservatives in these terms is so opposite of the truth that you can shake from what a gigantic lie it is.
I know. It is.
Somebody was mentioning to me, apropos of that, when did this happen? Somebody on the left showed up at a group of conservatives, and they noted that the person was completely treated well. You know, it was total comfort with the person, though he had all only opposite views. I don't know what brought him there. But if it were the opposite, if I showed up, let's say, at a left-wing place, I'm well-known, so forget me. If an equivalent of me, not well-known, but me. They knew was on the left. Okay, well, you're getting well-known. So, but I want to remove the fame part from it.
Okay.
So there's no comparison. Their discomfort with us is much greater than ours with them on a personal level.
Yes.
That's why, forgive me.
No, please.
This is why, and this was such a big part of my talks in my synagogue for Rosh Hashanah, about honoring your parents. It's all in one direction. I don't talk to my parent because he or she voted for Trump. You would never get, I don't talk to my parent because he or she voted for Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden.
Yep.
And if that person existed, we conservatives would call him an a-hole.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. We would. You know, when I'm out in the world, just, of course, living in Los Angeles, it's overwhelmingly liberal. I was at a coffee store the other day, one that I frequent almost every morning. I've turned into you. I've turned into a coffee drinker. I wasn't before, but now I am. Anyway, at this coffee store, there's a, I would assume, a transgender barista. I mean, the person looks and their voice sounds like they had made a transition. And again, I go almost every day and we have a great rapport and we chit chat and we talk about the weather. We talk about how our weekends were, the coffee. And, you know, the other day I walked in and the woman said to me, the trans woman said, you know, you are such a nice person.
Oh, no.
Yes. She goes, you are, you know, you're just always, you always come in here smiling and you're just so sweet to all of us. And we just like, you know, you're really sweet because she said we have a lot of, you know, as I like to call them, Lululemon Range Rover mommies that are like stick thin and come in and they like act like they're so cool and they, you know, treat you like you're trash because they're more important than you and they're getting their iced latte and they just want to get out. But I love, like you, I love chatting people up and meeting people. And so when this trans woman said to me, you're so sweet, you know what I really wanted to say back to her, but I didn't? I wanted to go, I'm conservative. Do you know that I'm conservative? Please don't forget how sweet. I want to tell so many people, whether it's baristas or waiters or
right.
or anything. You know, I'm actually who you would consider to be a bigot, but you know I'm really nice.
It's at these moments I feel like I'm talking to myself. In the best, truly best sense of the word. So I like to give $5 bills to the Starbucks because they don't get a lot of money. I want to encourage young people to work. And if they're sweet to me, I want to reward them. Every time I do, I suppress the urge to say, just for the record,
I know.
I'm conservative.
I know. I want to do it now. I actually think that we should.
I think we should. That's right.
I was trying to analyze why I didn't do it because obviously it's not because I feel ashamed to be conservative. Look at my job. I could not be more open about my beliefs. But I don't know. Sometimes, and this can be another interesting conversation. Sometimes when people ask me what I do for a job or in those moments where I could kind of come out with the fact that I am a public conservative, I choose not to go there. And I think it's because this is so much of my life and I really value thanks. And I think you've really taught me this. I really value keeping parts of life separate, having your professional life, but also having a personal life. So the reason why I didn't just say to that barista, you know, I'm conservative, was I didn't want to go down that whole discussion. Mm-hmm. I just wanted a break from thinking about the realm of the professional. But I'm going to I'm so motivated to do this. Later today or tomorrow when I go back there, I want to tell her if she's there and see what her reaction is. I'd be so fascinated to know if she'll still be nice to me or if she'll react in a way.
I'm fascinated to know.
I know. Why don't we both do it and we come back and tell the viewers how people react.
By the way, you mentioned talking about trends. Mm-hmm. So your parents are in Paris.
They are.
And so tell the listeners what you told me.
Yes. So my parents are in Paris right now, and God bless them. They never go on trips alone with one another. This is the first time in my 22 years of life I've
seen
them.
Are you serious?
Oh, they very rarely go on trips alone.
Why?
It's interesting. When they were leaving the house the other day, they're only gone for 8 days. I think this is day five, so they're going to be back fairly soon. But as they were leaving, both my parents said to me, there's a part of me that feels guilty right now leaving you and leaving my sister, my autistic sister, Gina, who lives in a group home, here in LA. And I said, why? You shouldn't feel guilty at all. You guys have worked so hard. You're such great parents. You're such great people. Go have fun. It's going to make me happy to know that you're having fun. And I think it was my dad who said, we're the type of people that stay at our posts. We really feel like we should always be at home being,
stay at our post.
I thought that was an interesting way to phrase it. And I sort of relate to that because how disciplined and overly hard on myself I am. I always feel guilty if I'm not
staying at your post.
Exactly. Staying at my post. But you talk a lot about how important it is for couples to have alone time. And I'm so happy they're doing that.
I had on my fireside chat a question from some young newly married guy, and he wants to know a young newly married, it doesn't matter, he was not a middle-aged guy or under 40. So basically the question was, Dennis, why do you think I have to balance this issue? My family, the only time that I can travel is the only time my family can travel. So don't I owe it to my family to travel with them as opposed to just my wife? Mm. And I said, no, you owe it to your family to travel just with your wife. Because the better you get along, the better it is for the kids. Mm-hmm. Whether they have another trip to Yellowstone or whatever it might be, it's lovely to have these family trips. They're going to grow up and they're going to make their own life. But if they had parents who loved each other, that will be far more enduring than another family trip to Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. By the way, for the record, you don't know this because you've only experienced family trips as the child.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, what is it like
okay,
as the parent?
So let me just say, and I'm crazy about my kids, as they know, as everybody knows.
Yes.
Nevertheless, family trips are tough on parents.
Oh, I'm sure.
It is the unspoken secret. Most parents need a vacation after a family vacation.
My dad would definitely echo that sentiment.
Okay.
He's the one booking the rental.
No,
car,
but,
the
oh, right. That's the least of it.
Okay.
Here's the biggest challenge. Basically, nothing the kids want to do you want to do. Okay.
Especially when they're little.
Yes, especially when they're little, exactly. So you are A, doing things you don't want to do.
Right.
B, you are preoccupied with having them have a good time, which is work.
Yes, totally.
So, if they're 18 and you both enjoy the same things, listen, if I went on a trip now with either of my sons, it would be effortless, obviously. They're adults. So, you know what? People have to be real. And it's real to acknowledge family vacation may not be what it's cracked up to be. And on the other hand, some of them are great. I have no doubt about that.
Oh, I couldn't imagine traveling with young kids. Just the effort of getting them
of
to
course.
The airport. You would just want to blow your brains out.
That's
I can
right.
imagine.
Yes.
So I don't want to forget why I originally brought up the stories of us, but before I say why we originally brought up the fact that my parents are in Paris, I want to comment on how important you're mentioning parents having alone time is, and, you know, parents fostering a bond. My own parents, as I mentioned, did not travel at all when I was growing up because they were stay at their post kind of people, but they were always very disciplined about going out to dinner with one another once or twice a week.
Okay, that's
usually
that's
on Friday
big.
Or Saturday.
Okay, that's great.
And it was always like, kids do not come. This mm-hmm. is our time to go out with other couples or with ourselves. And seeing that, I mean, of course there were nights when I would want to go out to the restaurant with them, or, you know, I wouldn't have minded if they would, you know, taken me to Paris this time. But as a child, seeing your parents find joy in one another and go out on dates and keep the romance alive, you're so right to say that does more for you than having that trip to Paris or going out to dinner with them. Seeing them having fun is the ultimate example and source of security for you too. So just good. Wanted to make that
yes.
clear.
Yes. No, no. Okay. It's very important for parents to think about
yes.
that.
Yes. And I also...
It is not selfish of you to want to go on vacation with your spouse.
Right. And I have to remember that as I get older because again, I'm the product of my parents. I have the same, as we've mentioned several
that's
times,
right.
stay at my post kind of mentality. So
yes.
I have to, as I get older,
so what
allow myself.
So you enjoyed PragerU.
Yes. I wanted to talk about why the original point of why you brought up the Paris thing, which is my mom told me that I just spoke with her on the phone driving in to record this podcast. And she sent me a photo of this woman on the street in this big ball gown because it's fashion week right now in Paris. And my sister and I responded to the text and it wasn't supposed to be rude. It was just genuine. We couldn't tell if that person was a man or a woman in the dress.
That's right. I couldn't tell. You showed me the picture.
I don't know if it's allowed, but if it is, Sean, I'll send you a photo and then you can put it up on video so people can see. I don't know if that's disrespecting the person's privacy, but... They're all the way in Paris. No one would
well,
know.
Well, first of all, they're walking in public. Secondly, you're not mocking them.
True.
You're simply stating, I can't tell.
Right. We could not tell. And my mom said...
Well, if you blur the face, we won't...
Yeah, the face
is no point.
The whole point.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter. Just trust me that it was a bit ambiguous. And my mom said on the phone, you know, Julie, I'm a bit surprised. She's been to Paris many times. She actually studied abroad in Paris in college. She said, when we walk down the street, every fifth or sixth person, we cannot tell if they're a man or a woman. Either way, they're sort of in that middle ground where it could be either.
The androgyny ideal is dates back to when I was your age. They were already beginning, unisex it was called.
Really?
Yeah, unisex barbershops, or not barbershops, hair salons, unisex
bathrooms.
Clothing, unisex bathrooms. And I knew it was a bad thing. I knew it very early on. The division is not good for people to blur the male-female distinction. It is one of the joys of life, one of the top joys of life, this strong distinction between male and female. Why would I want to be more or less indistinguishable from you? Why is that good for me?
It's a great point.
If I'm male and female, which is what you are if you're trans, you're biologically X and you're genderly, if you will, why? Why would I want to meet the other sex? There is no other sex. You have ended the issue of the other or opposite sex.
Right.
When I was in kindergarten, I remember already starting to be fascinated with girls. Not sexually. I didn't think
those terms.
Of course,
you're too young at that point.
Although, interestingly, I remember in first grade walking behind the girls up the steps from lunch so I could look under their skirts.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Well, that's remarkably honest.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have no problem
with
sexual
honesty. I know you don't.
People shouldn't have a problem with it. But I didn't have a sexual reaction, but I was incredibly curious.
Yes, of course.
But in retrospect, there was a richness to, wow, there's this whole other sex.
Right.
It's so fascinating. It's a challenge, but it's fascinating.
That's a really good point, that part of the joy in life, which we don't talk about at all when having these conversations is that men and women are different.
Yes.
And that when you eliminate these labels, then you're
right.
taking away. It's like meeting a really interesting person and trying to take away what makes them interesting and different for
perfect.
The sake of
That's
being
perfect.
BC.
That's correct.
Yes. You're not the only one who's lost money this year. With the current economic volatility, you've got to find a way to protect your finances in retirement. Have you thought about it? One way to do this is to invest in gold. I'm considering Lear Capital to add to my retirement as we are looking for stable investments. It's a great company, and I'm considering putting gold in my IRA. A record high inflation and interest rates are causing the stock market to sink. The great inflation of the 1970s and early 80s lasted over a decade, with gut-wrenching bear markets and long-lasting turbulence. The cost of everything, then and now, is insane. I think we're in this for a while, folks. Are you thinking about how this is impacting your savings or retirement? I'm considering gold and silver for my portfolio. Do you know that you can add physical gold and silver to your IRA or 401k? If you want to learn more, call Lear Capital today and ask about the Lear Advantage IRA. You can transfer or roll over your old 401k or IRA into a gold, tax-free, and penalty-free account. And to sweeten the deal, Lear is offering free shipping on every purchase and up to $15,000 in bonus silver to every qualified client. Call for details at 1-800-260-5075. You can get a free precious metals investor guide and work with the top-rated precious metals company on consumer affairs with a near-perfect rating on Trustpilot. Lear Capital is the gold standard in precious metals investing and has over $3 billion in trusted transactions with over 650,000 happy customers in the 25 years they've been in business. Call 1-800-260-5075 to get your free kit. See how gold has performed during periods of inflation, government debt, interest rate hikes, economic crashes, even wars, and you will see that gold has been that financial bedrock asset in portfolios. And what I really love about Lear is that they're an American-owned company, proud to do business with Americans that share our conservative values. So write this number down and give them a call today, 1-800-260-5075. That's 1-800-260-5075, 1-800-260-5075. And if you don't want to call, you can simply go to the link below to learn more. In every way that people, the left is trying to ruin what makes life cool and special. I talk ad nauseum. Actually, when you were on the Young Turks the other day, they played a clip from Dennis and Julie where I was talking about this very thing, how so many people at Harvard, I noticed, would put these computer stickers or these stickers on their computers indicating their demographic
category. I love women.
Yes, I love women, or I'm a proud black woman, or climate warrior. And they literally wear the uniform of their either demographic category or their political beliefs. And that is the same effect as the transgender craze does, because it takes away the texture that people have, the parts of them that do make them interesting and different. Instead, it just reduces them to, again, whatever their demographic or political characteristics are. And that's deadening.
By the way, when I had that debate on the Young Turks, which is a very, very popular left-wing podcast.
Yes.
So when they put you up, it was worth it.
I have to tell the viewers because it's so funny. So Dennis texted me, as you often do, and I so appreciate texted me before you went on the Young Turks at 4:30 p.m. a few days ago. And so, of course, I log on to watch it live. And I was texting you. I don't know if they had commercials, but when they were playing clips or something, I would text you. And occasionally, you know, I would say, great point you just made, and you would respond. And so when they brought up Dennis and Julie, that was at a point where I knew you couldn't respond to my text. But I knew that both of us were, I sitting behind my computer watching you and you sitting there conducting the interview, I knew that we were both thinking the same thing, which is honestly, yay. I'm glad that the Young Turks are watching our podcast.
Exactly.
I want anyone in the world to watch our podcast.
Not to mention, your point was one we dwelled on. So you were saying that they have all these stickers, and mm-hmm. this was at Harvard, right?
Yes.
Right. So all these stickers on the computers. Upside of their computer. And I've never, This, by the way, this is so big, we could spend the rest of the podcast on this. We won't, but I want you to know how big I think it is. And I didn't mention to her. I obviously reacted. But let me tell you and our listeners, I never understood, related to, engaged in any of these solidarity, pride type things. I mean, at 21, I was sent by Israel to smuggle items to Soviet Jews and to smuggle out the names of Soviet Jews who wanted to leave. It was pretty dangerous work, okay? I'm not a hero. I'm just saying. So I have given a lot of my life over to helping fellow Jews. But I would never have a sticker, proud to be a Jew.
Yes.
It'd be a bit odd.
It is odd.
It's odd in so many ways. What does it even mean? What does it mean? So.
And what does it do?
Well, I don't know what it does. I don't know what it means. To be perfectly honest, and I have this in my latest, actually, commentary, which is coming out any day now, my third volume of my five-volume Bible commentary.
Excited.
Thank you. You'll love it. You will love it. Deuteronomy. And I deal with the issue, I don't know how it arose, about ethnic pride. And so I mentioned, this is, you'll realize why I think this is such a big issue. We've never discussed this. So Jews, for example, are very proud of the utterly disproportionate number of Nobel Prize winners who were Jews. And most anyone would think it makes sense. So my response is, then you have to be ashamed of the disproportionate number of Jews who gave Stalin the nuclear bomb. There's only ethnic pride, but there's no ethnic shame.
Wow.
It's phony. So blacks, so there's black pride. Okay, right. there are a lot of blacks to be proud of, there's no question. But the disproportionate number of blacks involved in violent crime, is there black shame?
Such an interesting point. You're so right about that.
That's why I never understood it. I never understood black is beautiful,
right,
or Jewish pride, any of these things. I love women, so that's what raised this issue.
Yes, she got upset with you.
So I said, if you're not a gay woman, what does it mean you love women? Mm-hmm. I don't understand it.
Well, she was saying,
and by the way, would a guy put up, "I love men"?
Yeah, that was
he'd be regarded as a weirdo.
That was a good rejoinder.
Not for sexual reasons,
right? Well, what she was saying, which I thought was such a cheap shot, she was like, so if women are expressing confidence in themselves or
but this is non-confidence.
Support, right.
That's the joke. It shows you you're not
yes.
confident.
Well, precisely. And when I bring this up to you, when I talk about it on air, as I have done a few times, and when I would see it in person at Harvard, it made me really sad. I mean, first of all, it creeped me out and I thought it was just odd, but the secondary and overwhelming emotion was that it made me sad because I just see at our age, it's a vulnerable time in our lives. We're in that kind of – in college. We're in that middle kind of interim period between adolescence and adulthood. We're trying to figure out exactly who we are and we're making mistakes and we're trying in so many ways to get ourselves right. And to me, that just reflects a lack of confidence and a lack of competence at building a strong, robust individual identity. I think that those people who put those computer stickers on, or they wear, you know, I was saying they have the canvas bag with another pin on it saying vote or fight racism. It's really devastating because I think they're so desperately trying to find who they are and what their identity is. And the left has brainwashed them into thinking that this is the proper way to express their identity. The people who I know in my life who are the most insecure are the ones who are the most woke and political, because it's the thing that they desperately clutch onto in order to feel like they have a sense of belonging or just, again, a sense of self. But it's so misguided. That's your political ideology is not at all who you are. It's a fraction of who you are.
No, I'm just smiling because everything you're saying is so true. You're an insecure woman if you have any statement about how great you are as a woman. It means you're insecure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember, what was the song, I Am a Woman, Hear Me Roar? Remember that?
Oh, yes.
Sean, what was that song? No, it wasn't Katy Perry.
You know who Katy Perry is.
Believe it or not, yes. Helen Reddy, that's correct.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
See? I know a pop person, of course.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you so much.
Major Mazels.
Major what?
Mazels.
Mazels?
Mazels, right?
Isn't like that... in Mazel Tov?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Major Mazels.
That's hilarious. So here, I think we're going to get it now.
I am woman, hear me roar.
You never heard this?
The numbers to make do ignore. And I know too much to go back and pretend.
There's a Katy Perry song.
What year is this from?
I've heard it all before. And I've been down there on the floor. And no one's ever going to keep
old.
Me down.
This is 70s.
Yeah, yeah, this is really
70s. This is 70s.
Yes, I'm wise.
See,
but it's wisdom on the page.
Okay, so I'm a woman, hear me
yes,
roar. So... this notion, I'm a woman, I knew, I was quite young, but I knew only insecure people will say that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it would be considered so unmanly. I am a man, hear me roar.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with you, man?
You know, it's like when people compliment themselves or they say, you know, I'm super smart or I'm very hardworking or I did it. If you are those things, you don't need to say it. You're just secure in the fact that you are smart and you hardworking.
Right. Then this is 10 times truer for the
yes.
group. If you say it about just you, if you say I'm a hardworking person, but if you say women are all hardworking people, mm-hmm. that's an absurdity.
Right.
By the way, you will be happy to know this. I review my appearances in my brain afterwards. So after this Young Turks appearance, I reviewed in my mind, what could I have said better?
Yes.
I'm very okay with how I came across. But on the issue of the I love women,
mm-hmm.
I should have raised, this is one of the rare times where I really, I don't know if it's rare, but it's one time I really felt I should have said something. But she kept changing the topic so fast.
Yes, she did.
It was rough.
But it was hard to follow.
Yeah, right. So it is what it is. But I would have said, wait a minute, it's not true. She doesn't love conservative women.
Yes.
So that ends the whole issue. And half the women are conservative. So I love half the women means nothing.
Right.
So I love women means nothing.
Well, I'm remembering now, she was upset. Her arguments were, first of all, she said that you were not happy with the fact that women were expressing love for one another, which is just preposterous. And number two, this is what really got her mad. You responded by saying this is not going to go over well, but nevertheless, I'm going to say it. This is why women need men. That's what she was upset about.
Oh, if you say women need men...
Yes, they freak out.
You might as well say...
And men need women.
You are pro-murder.
I know. I know. I mean,
by the way,
right.
If you say men need women, men agree and women agree.
I know.
But if you say women need men, you're implying women are weak.
You should have just said to her, do you think that women don't need men?
She probably would have said that's correct.
Well, how do you procreate?
Well,
if you let's just talk about it bare.
You need the bare level. She would say you need sperm, but you don't need men. That's she would have an answer.
Mm.
I've done this enough.
You've done it enough.
You know what their
answer
might be.
You've done it 50 more years than I've done it.
Yes, that's correct. May you still be doing it in 50 years.
I pray to God that I will be. I have a question. I want to react to more things that you guys talked about because I think it's endlessly fascinating. But I want to ask you, one of the things that I admire so much about you, not just in that appearance, but just in all of your appearances writ large, is that you never lose your cool. I was telling Sean this the other day. I said, you have this great way of just rising above the BS.
Mm-hmm.
And I even noticed in that interview, she would say things and you would chuckle. And it wasn't in a, you're such an idiot, I'm laughing at you kind of way, the way a lot of people do on television. It was a very, I can't really describe it, but it was just an amusing, not at all self-aggrandizing, not at all arrogant, but sort of lightening the mood laugh. And the way that you challenge people, I think, is just really rare because we see people on both sides getting so angry. I'm sitting there watching the interview upset. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think she's being fair to you. She's interrupting you. She would move on to the next subject and wouldn't let you respond to one of the insults she would hurl at you. But I just so admire your ability to remain calm. So I want to ask you, on the inside, do you ever get angry? Have you, or did you used to get angry and now you've just really learned how to suppress it? I just think, how can you not be sitting there not fuming?
I'm very, very mind directed.
Yes.
It has been the great blessing of my life. I have it naturally and I've cultivated it. Let me give you a natural example. When I made the high school varsity basketball team at my school, which I only made because I was the tallest kid in the entire school, I had no basketball talent. I had height. So the coach announces the final cuts, and he said, Prager made the team. We've really scraped the bottom of the barrel.
Oh, my God.
Right, okay. So you will love this. That's funny. You've never heard me talk about this?
I think you did at Shabbat dinner, but I don't remember the rest of the story.
So I remember my reaction like it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I said to myself, this guy is an a-hole.
Mm-hmm.
But he's right. So I have had, from the earliest time that I could remember thinking, I have thought with my mind. I didn't think with my heart, oh, I'm insulted. I thought, is the guy right? So we know he's a jerk for being...
For saying it.
Publicly embarrassing right. me. Fine. Which I didn't care, by the way. But
and you don't care now.
And I don't care now. I'll tell you, there is one thing I care about, being misquoted.
Oh, of course. That's very angry.
But aside from that. So, but my mind said, he's right. When my mind says do X, I do X. My mind says, Dennis, you will prevail by staying calm.
Yes.
I stay calm.
And I know that, and I do too when I debate with the leftists. I am very well aware that it will be a strength of mine if I stay calm. And also, it's just the way, just my own sense of right and wrong and personal decorum. I don't think it's right to get loud and angry during arguments. But on the inside, I'm upset. On the inside, I'm angry. You don't seem on the inside to be angry. Are you?
So, it's a good question. What am I? Let me ask you a question. Would you be angry do you get angry if a dog barks too much? And the answer is, how do you get angry at a dog? I mean, it's right. I'm not comparing her or any leftist to a dog.
That's the new headline on the Young Turks.
I know, so I want to make clear. I'm merely saying I expect that behavior from people
right.
on the left. So when you expect X and you get X, you don't get that angry.
I hear you, and I expect it too, but I know that we both agree the dog analogy doesn't quite fit, but...
No, it only fits in that I'm not surprised.
Of course, I understand. Right. But with a dog, they can't help it, you know? That's just...
Right.
They can't suppress their barking.
I don't know if they can help it.
Well, right. That's what we've talked about the past few podcasts.
They're so angry, and they're so... I believe there is no leftist that I am aware of is capable of a rational argument.
Mm-hmm.
Liberals are, conservatives are, but no leftist. Because you can't be a leftist and have come to your conclusions rationally. If you say America's systemically racist, you're irrational. Aside from being a liar and being vile, you are irrational. It is irrational to say men give birth. What am I going to argue with you? Really, men give birth? You believe that?
Mm-hmm.
Men have a uterus?
Mm-hmm.
Men have a vagina? Men have eggs? I mean, what are you talking about?
We all know the importance of an education that teaches you critical thinking and prepares you for the real world. That's why I encourage anyone considering higher education to consider the King's College. The King's College is a Christian liberal arts college with classes in New York City and online. Their core curriculum, based on politics, philosophy, and economics, teaches students how to interpret, question, and apply the most important texts throughout history. Whether you study business management, philosophy, pre-law, humanities, or one of the other majors and minors offered by the King's College, you'll become the kind of thinker that is on the road to leading with integrity. Graduates from the King's College have even gone on to my alma mater, Harvard, as well as other top schools like MIT and Georgetown. The drive that is instilled in graduates of the King's College is what sets them apart from other students. So what are you waiting for? Apply to the King's College today for free at tkc.edu. That's tkc.edu. You know, I think also another thing I learned from that interview and just from watching you all the time and listening to you, I love, love, love your saying clarity over agreement. And when you just raised this idea that it's just we hear it all the time, but every time I'm reminded that there are people out there who really do believe that men give birth, I just think it's so preposterous. And at that point, it's not even worth arguing with them. And that's where your clarity over agreement line comes in.
Just make it clear.
Yes.
This is what they believe. You don't believe it. So what does it say about them?
Yes, because you're just wasting your time.
That's right.
Go around in circles for 10 days and you are never going to agree.
That's right.
So you just, and that's what you do so powerfully. You just expose, okay, this is what that person thinks. This is what I think and now we can move on.
I think twice with her, I said, look, my motto is
clarity
over
agreement.
Yes, I did it twice.
You're
saying X, I'm saying not X. We can now move on.
I have a question that's a little off topic, but again, this discussion of men giving birth made me think of it. And we were talking before this podcast started about at UC Berkeley, the law school has
all these law student groups that have banned any pro-Israel or Zionist speaker.
Right. And I was just thinking with that example, and then, of course, with the men give birth example, when did this really become so bad? I mean, the left wing has always had a presence in America. Certainly in the last 60 years, it's been, I would say, a bit wacko. But this, what's happened, I think, in the last 5 years is truly in another category of insanity. But you predicted so much of it. Of course, there's that famous, what was it, Bill Maher interview mm-hmm. where you said something about pronouns.
Men menstruate.
Yes, men menstruate. Yeah. And everyone laughed at you like
including him, like you were
a crazy person for saying that people are going to believe that. And then it became mainstream. So you saw it. I have to say, I think a lot about, you know, if I were, of course, in 2006, I was 6 years old. But if I were an older adult at that time and had the knowledge of, you know, the world, would I be a conservative back then? It's a question that fascinates me. Like when in the history of the United States would the turning point have been for me being a by default liberal to becoming a conservative? I mean, I don't know, though, if I could have spotted this a few years ago the way you did. What made you spot it? Because it's just, I would probably be one of those people in the audience that would laugh at you because I would go, of course, the left is getting crazy, but it would never get that crazy. How did you predict it?
You're asking a very sensitive question. I'll explain why in a moment. Just let me tell you, in the 1980s, I published a newsletter. This is more or less pre-internet, just as the internet was beginning. So people still subscribe to magazines. And I published a quarterly called Ultimate Issues. That's what got the name of my show, my hour. And I wrote an essay in the 1980s, The War Against Differences, including male, female, in the 1980s.
Wow.
And I said, when you abolish these differences, you end up with totalitarianism. And I remember writing it and thinking most of the readers won't see the connection. But I was right.
But it will age well.
It did age well. So how did I know? Well, this is the reason it's sensitive is because to tell you what I really believe, it's going to sound dangerously pompous. But
I know
it's not pompous.
I know
where
you're going to say,
it's
and I agree
pompous.
With you.
It's a gift.
It is a gift.
I don't take any credit.
Look, you're
for
not
it.
Good at basketball. You didn't get that gift, but you got this gift. It's right. not. You're just stating a fact.
It's just a fact. Look, even you have raised the issue of, you know, my opposition to same-sex marriage, to redefining marriage, as I put it. But I said over and over, the argument for a same-sex marriage is gender doesn't matter. And I said, that argument is going to lead us to hell.
It's a legitimate argument.
Now you see where it's led us.
So you're saying it's primary, it's a gift. That's how you do.
That's correct.
Do you think it was your extensive knowledge of history, or you're just doing this as a career and researching it all the time? Like, do you think there was something that you...
Yes, aside from gift, you yes, learned... I'll tell you what I think. There was the Torah. Mm. Those five books... The reason I'm devoting so much time to my Bible commentary, which is a Torah commentary, is I know how they've influenced me. I don't think I've ever said this publicly. That's one of the beauties of our podcast. It forces me to say things
yes.
I don't normally say. At a certain point, I don't remember when, but it was early on, I said to myself, wow, your instincts are identical to the Torah's. And it blew my mind. My natural mode of thinking was the Torah's mode of thinking. Mm-hmm. And that's why I feel such a moral obligation to get it in print. Because if you take those five books seriously, you will think morally clearly. You will think clearly about everything.
And you'll be so much happier.
Yeah, well, you could testify.
Oh, my God. I mean, your life will, society will run better. Your life will run better. Personally, you will feel enriched and fulfilled and happier. I really think, and I know it sounds sort of extreme or perhaps like I'm hyperbolizing to say it, I think it's the answer to everything.
Oh, I know it's the answer
it
to
is.
Everything. That's why it's frustrating that it isn't out there more.
I know.
As much as it's out there, my biggest frustration is it's not out there more. This is the answer to evil or even unhappiness.
Mm-hmm. You know, I said this. I know I said the first part on our podcast, but I said the second part in the PragerU video I just filmed, and I think it's worth mentioning here. You know that I think it's incredibly creepy that people my age fight against things that most of them have never seen before. Racism, climate change.
Oppression,
you know, what are their words? Homophobia, transphobia, etc. But on the flip side of that, the things that they disparage, they have never tried out before. So they criticize things that they've never seen before. And they also kind of criticize things they've never seen before, where, you know, if they talk about religion and how oppressive and terrible and patriarchal and all the, you know, adjectives that they love to throw in there, the Bible is, most of them have never been to a religious service. They've never even read the Bible. All of my friends from college, I don't think a single one of them has ever opened the Bible once. And yet, not those friends, because I wouldn't be friends with them, but...
Right.
My school writ large, it's like just a common, you know, it's common knowledge that the Bible is this horrible thing. How do you know?
Yes, exactly.
How do you know?
Right.
That is the
right.
epitome of pomposity and self-aggrandizement and just dishonesty.
If somebody were to say, I don't think the Quran is a good guide to life.
Oh.
Somebody would say to them, well, you're an Islamophobe. Did you actually read the whole Quran?
Yes, exactly.
Did you study it?
Great
but
point.
If you say the Bible isn't, oh, of course
it's totally
not.
Fine.
Right.
It just shows to me how we talk a lot about how the left screws people's brains up. But also there is such an astounding lack of self-awareness among the people that I went to school with. Like, they don't even take a step back to ask themselves what I think is a fairly simple question. Why am I excoriating something that I've never read? Hmm. Or maybe is it not right for me to advocate for defunding the police when I live in a dorm that is guarded by heavily funded
police.
Security people?
Right.
There is just, and I don't know, I mean, certainly screwing up your brain equals a lot of your faculties like self-awareness going away. But that is a killer combination of having irrational thought plus no ability to check yourself. I was thinking recently,
they wouldn't have said, gee, the coach is right.
Yes. Oh, they would have. Trust me, I have seen people cry, scream, and run out of the classroom/gym when teachers or coaches have said things.
You
far
have?
Oh, of course. There was an incident in high school where there was a girl that was always late to class, and of course she would come in with a coffee, so she was late, but she had enough time to go to Starbucks in the morning. And one of the classes, our Spanish teacher said, "Why are you always late?" In front of the whole class, or, can you get here on time? All of your other classmates are here, and you are consistently 15 minutes behind the clock. And she looked at my Spanish teacher, and she goes, "I just got in a horrible fight with my dad. How dare you?"
She did?
Yes. "You have no idea, you have no idea why I'm
that
late."
That is a fascinating
And she
anecdote.
Ran out of the classroom.
Fascinating.
She ran out of the classroom. And then the mother had to come in, and then the administrator and the Spanish teacher and the child and the mother had this whole conversation, and it was this big deal. And I thought, only at an LA private school. And also, I'm not saying this to compliment myself, but I just know myself. First of all, I would never be late. And second of all, if I were late and a teacher reprimanded me for it, I would just go, "They're so right. I'm awful. I'm a delinquent. I'm a horrible student. I'm a horrible person. I need to repent." That would be, my reaction would be, "I am rotten. I need to do better." This girl's reaction was, "This teacher is so mean for telling me I need to show up on time to class." But that's the
narcissism of that response.
Right.
"I had a fight with my father, so you're wrong about my being late?"
I know. But it shows the way that the left places a premium on your feelings or your experiences.
That's right.
If you have a bad feeling or if you have a particular experience, that trumps any other obligations that you have. That can be the be-all, end-all excuse for just about anything.
People should watch my next Fireside Chat. The young woman from PragerU who tells me what's in the news or
Megan.
Thoughts. Megan, too. Megan, oh. One is now a mom. Megan,
is she no longer working?
Well, she's right
this
now.
This is one of Dennis's Fireside Chat camera
right.
people.
So either Megan would come in with some suggestions on what my opening comments would be, and I often took them. So she, in light of my taking on that sign, "The world is a better place because you're in it,"
yes,
to fifth graders. So she said, "Look at these messages. Google," what was it? "Google quotes on flaws." I think that's
mm-hmm.
what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all in the form of like a, a poster. And so they would typically be, "Embrace your flaws. You are lovable because of your flaws."
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
There was not a single sign in all of the Google search
that asked something of the person who
yes,
has the flaw.
Like, "You have flaws. You should work on them." Leftism is narcissism.
It doesn't ask anything of you. Unlike conservatism,
right.
Leftism doesn't
yes.
ask anything of you.
Right. Oh, it does. You should use less carbon dioxide footprint.
Right, but they don't. But they don't do it.
Right. No. Fine. But either way, that's what they think sacrifices.
Right.
I don't have to work on me. I have to work on my carbon footprint.
Right. Yep.
But this flaws thing was mind blowing. "You are lovable because of your flaws." That's nonsense. So then, as I said in my opening comments, then the more flaws you have, the more lovable you are.
Yes. And, the thing that I can't understand is, you were talking a few minutes ago about how you're very mind-driven. And I also, not surprisingly, am very mind-driven, but I'm certainly trying to become more so. And I just think it is such a deeply empowering thing to know that if you, flex the muscle of critical thought and rational thought that you can just make your life better by overcoming your maybe more malignant natural impulses. I think that's such a cool thing that your mind has the capability to talk you out of being upset that that coach was mean to you by saying, you know what, he was right and he's an a-hole and whatever, I'm just going to move on with my day. I think that is like a gift from God.
Totally.
That is one of the most interesting parts of a human being and of life. Mm-hmm. And this is a theme of the podcast today. It goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning. In every way, the left is taking away those parts of life that make you interesting and unique and cool. By eliminating, you know, gender distinctions, they're taking away the beautiful differences between men and women. By reducing you to just your political beliefs, they're taking away the more individual aspects of your identity.
How could you hold there's no difference between men and women and then say, I'm the other sex? If the sexes are the same, what is the point of becoming the other sex?
Yeah.
You're not being any different.
That's so true.
Either there are two sexes and you become the other, or there's no binary. Then what are you changing to?
Yes, and also with that computer sticker that says, you know, women rule the world, or there's a Beyonce song that's called Run the World, I think it's called, and the whole chorus is, who run the world? Girls, and it's just the whole song. What is the point of elevating women or saying women are these superior creatures if gender is just a construct and actually it doesn't exist?
If any man can be a woman.
Exactly. It's endlessly fascinating to me how the left contradicts themselves with regard to so many things.
Well, I said if you're a rational thinker, you can't be a leftist.
I remember what a fuss the left made about Trump building the immigration wall in 2016, that it was xenophobic and you were separating families from one another. It was so horrible. And then after January 6th, what do? They build a huge wall around the Capitol. Well, I thought walls don't work. I thought that they're ineffective and they're xenophobic and they're...
Well, if walls don't work, how did Israel go from massive numbers of victims of terrorism to virtually zero?
Right.
Purely because of a wall.
Right. But I was just bringing up that example to say, again, it is endlessly fascinating to me how they so obviously, constantly contradict themselves. And they don't... Again, it goes back to my point about their lack of self-awareness. They don't seem to realize it. And what I would like to postulate is that it's because, as we've talked about, it's impossible to be a hypocrite on the left because they can justify any change in their thinking under the guise of, well, we're progressives. We can just progress away from whatever position we had before and change our ideas. But really what that's a cover for is that they don't have any principles. What I love about conservatism is that you have to lay down your values and your principles, and then you can serve them.
Well, here's the beauty.
Leftism doesn't have principles.
Just to give a simple example, if a conservative cheats on his wife, mm-hmm. it's called the hypocrite. Family values, religion, and look, he cheats on his wife.
Right.
If a leftist, was Bill Clinton ever called a hypocrite? Never.
Wow. Yeah.
I'd like to know what a leftist could do that people on the left would say he's a hypocrite.
You have all helped to build MyPillow into the great company that it is today and have trusted in Mike Lindell to give you a great night's sleep. On top of the special exclusively for my listeners on the Percale and Giza Dream bed sheets marked down as low as $29.98, Mike's now changing the game with his three-piece towel set. This set, which I own and love, is made with USA cotton, making it extremely absorbent, yet still providing that soft feel you look for in a towel. The set comes with one bath towel, one hand towel, and one washcloth, typically retailing for $49.99. For a limited time, you can get this three-piece towel set for the low price of $19.98 with the promo code Hartman. Don't miss out on these incredible offers. There's a limited supply, so be sure to order now by calling 1-800-566-6745 and use the promo code Hartman. Or go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square and use the promo code Hartman. God, I'm going to use that Bill Clinton example.
Right. Never. That not is, once.
He was called a lot of different things, but he never was a hypocrite.
He was called a dog.
That is fascinating.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
That's, by the way, that is part of the appeal of being on the left. You don't have a personal set of standards by which you are judged.
Right.
You are not judged on the left.
It's just a free-for-all. You can believe whatever you want and switch, and you will always have a home there because that's just what they do.
Yes.
That is a fascinating question. What could they do or say that they would be
called
a hypocrite
for? When the environmentalist leaders fly on private jets using more fuel and carbon emissions than the average citizen does in a year on regular jets, they're not hypocrites.
See, this is why, and I know we've come back to this, I think, two or three times in the last few podcasts, but this is why I fundamentally believe that overwhelmingly left-wingers are frauds. I'm sorry to say it. I don't think that they really believe in most of what they're saying because they know.
I think that they talk themselves into it.
They might on some things, but overwhelmingly, they know that AOC and Leonardo DiCaprio and John Kerry fly on these private planes and they look the other way and they don't care. That indicates to me that they really don't have a principle or a value surrounding climate change.
How could you tell me that climate change, global warming, is an existential threat? That means a threat to the existence of biological life and not be for nuclear power. The cleanest form of energy takes up tiny space compared to the gigantic areas of wind windmills. They're not called windmills. What are they called again?
Wind turbines?
Wind turbines and solar panels. It's endless. It's endless.
I just don't, you know, the thing that also fascinates me is that I talk a lot about, you know, people my age, because I just graduated from college, and what they think. And I was wondering the other day, are they always going to hold these views? Or one day are they going to wake up and look back and see how irrational and unprincipled and wrong they were about many things? I don't know
the answer.
Are they going to outgrow this, or is it just going to become worse and worse?
I wonder, will the future judge this era as an insane era that they said men give birth, and that if you didn't say that, you were considered a science denier and a hater? Mm-hmm. Will they realize that lockdowns only hurt people? They did nothing good. They only did harm. Only. Mm-hmm. They were among the most harmful acts governments have done outside of bad wars in the history of the world. Will they acknowledge that? Will they acknowledge the damage done, only damage to children, by not having them go to school? Sweden sent kids to school the whole time. The kids under 16, to be very precise. Elementary school and most of high school. Will they acknowledge what Denmark has just announced? They tell you do not vaccinate anyone under 50. Will they acknowledge that vaccines did a lot of harm, may have done some good, but did a lot of harm?
They can't even simply acknowledge it because then they view that as a concession.
It is a concession.
Right, but they view it as a crippling concession.
Crippling. They're entirely right.
Of course
their whole edifice comes crumbling down with any one of the things I mentioned.
That's why they can't give you an inch.
That's
right. They can't give you an inch because if they even gave us an inch, the whole edifice would crumble.
Well, talking about that, on that debate on the Young Turks, when she raised the issue of, what about two incomes and so on? I said that's a very real issue.
Yes, that was a very...
I fully acknowledge it. And that if a woman doesn't have a career to fall back on and she gets divorced, what is she going to do for money? I acknowledge that that's an issue because my edifice does not stand on every claim has to be true because it's not false. My edifice stands on truth.
Yes.
It doesn't stand on positions.
Right. And I noticed in that interview, and I just notice when talking to leftists in my daily life, that they try to push you into these binaries, like either you you know, like you either believe this or you believe that. In that example, you either believe that women shouldn't work or that they should be allowed to work.
The claim, so you think women are weak. If I don't think a woman should have a sticker, I love all women, that means I think that she should be weak. It's a strong woman who doesn't have to state I love all women.
Mm-hmm. It's just astounding to me the way, and they try to do it in interviews. They try, because it's their way of looking at the world. They try to push you into a corner. And what I try to say when I'm debating with people, you know, it happens all the time when I talk about Black Lives Matter and African-American culture in this country, the prevalence of crime and fatherlessness and out-of-wedlock births, because so what would happen so often in college is that people would say, oh, so you know, if you are talking about this, then you must believe that Black culture is inferior, or you must believe that, you know.
No, even worse, Blacks are inferior.
Yes, that Black, well, yes. Exactly, Blacks, because I mean, I wouldn't say Black culture is inferior, but I would say that African-American culture right now certainly has some debilitating issues. But yes, they would try to push me into the corner of saying that Black people are inferior. And I would say, like, why is this your way of looking at the world?
Yeah.
Either can't we be somewhere? I mean, in the middle doesn't quite make sense
That's why I said what I just said earlier. If truth is your foundation,
mm-hmm.
you leave the left.
Yes. And you don't view saying what you said on the Young Turks. Yes, women's, you know, some women who are in unfortunate socioeconomic situations, that is a real issue. You don't view that as a concession, because it's not a concession.
Right.
Your point still stands, even if it doesn't apply to every single circumstance. As a conservative, when I acknowledge that some of the things they bring up may be legitimate, I don't feel like I've weakened myself.
Exactly.
In fact, I feel like I've substantiated
That's
myself.
Correct. You gain credibility.
Yes. And I want to know the reality of the situation. I want to know the whole truth and analyze it. And if what they're saying is true, I have no problem agreeing with them, because that's just pushing us towards a goal that we should all hope to have, which is to acknowledge what is real.
So let me, before we end our session here,
are we really almost done?
Yeah, yes, we are. It's amazing. So I was just thinking, we should always ensure there's a personal moment.
On this podcast?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that's hard for us to accomplish.
No, it's not at all. And sometimes it's dominant.
Right.
But I think more macro was dominant this time. So I'm going to throw a personal question at you. You have a tremendous amount of success at a very early age.
Thank you.
So, no, it's not a compliment. It's a fact. It's like saying you have blonde hair. I mean, it's a fact. So what do you do with that?
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's an abnormal life at your age. It's an abnormal life at any age, but especially so. I had to deal with it. It was a good thing to deal with. But I was blessed, like you, with doing very public things at your age. So I know, I don't want to say what I did. I want to know, do you think, I can give you a multiple choice.
Right.
Man, am I lucky. Man, did I earn this. God, am I? I obviously have some gifts, which thank God have been recognized.
Mm.
I'm just giving you. It may be none of them, maybe
right.
all of them.
Right. I certainly think, as you know, all the time, I am so lucky. We talk on the phone, as the viewers know, a lot, and I just say I can't believe that this is my life. I know I worked hard for it, and I know that I've earned it, but still, with so many things in life, a lot of it is luck, and it was. Extraordinarily lucky that you opened the email that I sent you 2 years ago. I was lucky that you were kind enough to invite me in. So I am very, very grateful for my good fortune. I have always, in high school and before high school, I was a very elite athlete, would travel all around California playing soccer or swimming or water polo, and my teams would get to a very high level. And so I was always in the pressure mode, in the I've got to achieve mode. And from a very young age, I tried to knock, and it wasn't, when I say try, it implies effort. It was sort of natural. I just knocked the feeling of being proud of myself out of me, because I remember thinking, if I win a swimming race and get a medal, I'm going to become haughty, or I'm going to become content with the fact that I got this medal. And then I'm not going to be working hard enough, and someone's going to eclipse me, and the next time I'm not going to get that medal. So I, even if I have a you know, teensy tiny bit of pride in my accomplishments. I've got to get rid of that because it's just going to cripple me and prevent me from getting the next one. So I've always had, and also most of it too was, even though I've never been a supercilious, haughty person, I so detest those characteristics in other people. I hate arrogant people. I so badly didn't want to be that in any kind of way. So I've just gotten so used to not recognizing that I should be proud of myself, if that makes sense. Another thing I'll say, and then I'll shut up because I know I'm going on for a long time, but it's interesting to me. I have a friend who's in town, as you know, from college. And last night at dinner, she was asking me about this job. And she said, you know, we never really talk about it. And I said, you're right. And I noticed with a lot of my friends, some of them listen to this, and I'm very grateful for those who do. But most of them don't. And I actually like it better that way. Because when I'm with my friends, I'm just Julie. I'm not Julie, the public conservative figure. We talk about things that don't pertain to politics. We're silly with one another. We talk about our families, our interests. And I like that kind of segregation. So that also is a very helpful way for me to deal with all of this public exposure. Because when I'm with people in my life, it's not a factor. How about that for a long answer? Just shows I've been reflecting on it.
It could have been longer. It was perfectly legitimate and interesting.
That pride point that I made, do you try to knock any feeling of being proud of yourself out of you?
Next time, ask me the same question. How did I deal with this at your age?
I really want to know.
Yes.
Please
give
a teaser.
I'll tell you one thing specific to your question. At a very early age, I realized, A, without friends, life is not worth living.
Yes.
And I have always had men I loved. I'm talking about male friends. B, I'm going to lose them all with this tiny amount of arrogance.
It's true.
Yes. So as yours
that's
was...
That's a really good point.
It was your point. I'm just putting it in my terms. But well, I realized it so early. And every one of my friends, if you tortured them, they would say, Dennis doesn't have a shred of arrogance.
Well, the point that I think that, or at least what I took from your rephrasing, was that when, I want to make sure this comes out in a not arrogant way, but when you're in the position that the two of us are in, when you're doing a public job, you have to be especially careful.
That's right.
Even in a small way about talking about your job.
Yes, you're so, you see, because that's wisdom at your age.
Because inherently, it's going to seem braggadocious.
That's exactly correct.
If you know, when I go and sit with my friends and I say, I just guest hosted Dennis's nationally syndicated talk radio show, that is just a fact of what I did, and that is a fact of my job. But that comes, people go, wow. Or
that's
that
right.
comes out as like, I just guest hosted Dennis's nationally syndicated.
That's right.
So that's the point that I thought you were making. We have to be extra.
Oh, it is.
Downplay it.
That's exactly
because
right.
Even when we're not trying to brag, at times it does come off as braggy.
I even monitor how much I speak. That
Me
I should
too.
In no way be the dominant
well,
voice.
Well, you have to, especially because you're so famous and you're so well-known.
Okay,
well known,
right.
But,
yes, okay. But
even I notice and
that's
I'm...
That's right. No, you're right to. I know you do.
Not nearly as well-known.
I know you
known,
do. I watch you like a hawk.
I know you watch me like a hawk.
And
I watch you like a hawk.
I just want you to know. That's right.
No, but we watch people... Like, you
yes.
watch me and I watch you because we watch everyone like hawks.
That's true. It's a good point.
You're saying you want me to know... And I
I'm blown away at what I see.
Well,
I know I'm embarrassing you.
Thank
but
you.
I watch the way you treat people, and it's very beautiful.
Well, it's, ditto.
Right. Well, okay. I'll agree to that. My mom, I said this at my when I conducted my Rosh Hashanah service. I spoke because my mother died on Rosh Hashanah.
Really?
Yeah, so it's every year it's the anniversary of her death when I do my service. And I said, I'd like to tell you something about my mom. My mother made everyone she met feel like they were the most important person in her life. And so we'll end with this because this is a precious line. She would, for example, I remember looking at this again. She, if the electrician or plumber came to the house, she served them a meal.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God is correct.
My mother is the same way about making people feel important.
That's a big
she
deal.
She does not serve a meal
oh,
to
yeah,
the plumber.
Right. This blew my mind.
That's
so
crazy.
You, but it will end with this because this proves my point and shows how different I was at about 10 years of age, 11 maybe. Mm-hmm. I guess more like 11, but I don't know the exact age. I looked at her and I said, Ma, all I'm asking is that you treat me like the electrician.
What did she say to that?
I have no memory of it, but it was such a great line.
It is a great line. And your mom was a conservative, and look, she was a nice person too.
It's funny, they would never have said they were conservative.
Of course.
They,
I mean,
they were Jews from New York, were Democrats. Right. But every value they had was conservative. I mean, if they were alive today, you think they would say men give birth? It's inconceivable.
Of course. Right. Yep.
Well, this was great.
This so much fun. And next time...
Social media.
Yes, I
reminder.
Know. But I'm saying, and I'm reminding you and
that
myself
what?
That we got to come back next week having told a few people that we are conservative. I'm telling that transgender barista.
Oh, wow.
Who were you telling?
You.
Oh, right. Like I didn't already know that. Okay. You could reach us at julie@julie-hartman.com. That's my email. I read all of them. Unfortunately, I can't respond to most of them because I'm just so busy, but I send many of them along to Dennis, and I so appreciate your mail. I benefit from your suggestions and advice, and so please keep writing to me. And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at DennisJuliePod on Instagram and at DennisJuliePod. No, it's Dennis Julie Pod, not Dennis and Julie Pod. No, and Dennis Julie Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And then on Facebook, it's Dennis and Julie Podcast.
And you should all tell young people about this.
Especially everyone, but especially
everyone,
young
but
people.
Especially young people. I think it could make them think. And that's important.
I agree. And go
tell
people you're conservative. I want reactions
that's right.
too.
On your next, and if you're not kind, tell them you're on the left.
Great.
And everybody wants the same. Everybody wants the same.